And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's Just Something I've Noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. It's Tuesday. Deal with it. Gary, how are you?
Not bad. Not bad at all. I want a 401k bailout.
Yeah. Like, no kidding.
Just from yesterday.
I could have sworn I put twice as much in.
Yes.
I would have. Let me rephrase that. If not for the blah, 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 whoever we're blaming right now, then I would have insert whoever.
All right, let's start with this.
Yeah, I would have at least 7 times more than I have now.
Carry the 4.
8.5 times more than I have now.
All right, this was the best though. This is really the best.
All right.
On a day where now over the last week he's moved to the middle on 3 different issues.
Oh no, he's running.
It shows he's running. And another point was made. They said this is because Ron Klain is gone. And what's his name? Jeffrey, is it Zeitz? This is the difference.
Klain
right there.
Has been gone for what? Almost a couple of weeks. It was sometime in February. That's true. Yeah.
And it's like all these is because he's gone. And it's like, no, you're running for election. You need to get back to where, because the left is just furious with him. But all these things that he's doing are only going to be, you know, ConocoPhillips thing is just blip.
Right. Yeah.
That's just so he can say it. I mean, that's like what I see 0.02 percent of the land available in Alaska, and he's shutting everything else down. So he's trying to play it both ways.
Right. Right.
And then you look at the what was the other thing? The 2 other things that he did. Oh, I got mind blank here.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
First of all, he announced just moments ago that our border is broken, and he believes we need to fix the border now.
No, the District of Columbia Criminal Code.
Yeah, 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 yeah. The about was, face there.
Yeah, that was the one, and there was one. The proposal to go back to basically Trump's Remain in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, those 3 just in the last couple of weeks. It's like, and everyone, we said, okay, he's running.
Well,
he is pretending that he is attempting to solve the problems that, in essence, liberalism and he has caused.
So something happened, and I honestly, we looked at it the other day, and you know, I was talking about his defiance as an individual, and that just the nature of who he is, and that still applies here. But if you look at the about face on the DC crime thing, and you pair it with the other 2, then it was about we need to change direction and we need to do that now.
But the thing that kills him on all these particular, that's none of these things are really going to change much.
Mm-hmm.
He may be able to use them when he's campaigning. What kills him is what he did yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's after he gave his statement on the banks, Not only did he turn around and walk away as the questions are being asked, but I don't know what room he did in the White House, but this one has a door. So he just didn't walk away and then magically go behind a curtain somewhere.
Right.
He actually opened the door and then shut the door as they're you know, yelling the questions at him.
Right.
And it just was, let's hear it here, because you're just going to hear the questions. He's done, and the questions are being asked. Here we go.
President, what do you know right now about why this happened? And can you assure Americans that there won't be a ripple effect?
Do you expect other banks to fail, Mr. President? Should all depositors be protected at all banks?
All right, thank you.
You can hear the door being closed. You can hear it open up. It's like a slight little, but he opens it up, and then he walks through, doesn't even turn around and look back.
No.
Because the fact is, he can't. We said this yesterday. The political problem here is the fact that we live in a more populist society. So everybody makes comparisons. If somebody gets a bailout, well, then why don't we get a bailout?
Right.
Who was it? I think it was, I don't know if it was Jim Garrity in National Review talking about somebody on CNN asked the question, well, what you need to ask these people is if you're against the student loan bailout, Are you also against the over $250,000 bailout? Garrity goes, yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
But all these comparisons are being made now. You heard it yesterday. I mean, you saw the on many different news shows, they had people that were depositors that had over $250,000 that were saying, it's my business, it's my business, it's my business.
Right.
And I'm thinking, as I'm watching the liberal networks do that, I'm like, this isn't going to play well.
No.
It's not going to play well.
No.
And then it came up, oh, the people of East Palestine you don't care about.
Right.
But the billionaires, you know, you do, these venture capitalists. And then the Wall Street Journal put out the specifics of how much they were paying, you know, on these deposits, and how much these deposits have increased over the last couple of years, and you know, making the point as we made yesterday that when the president says it's not a bailout, oh man, I mean, that was by the time we got to the end of the day yesterday, and this is by the afternoon. I fell asleep, so I didn't get to see what happened in the evening. But by the time we got to the afternoon, there was nobody questioning whether it was a bailout anymore.
No, and you know how you knew it was a bailout? Because not long after our show ended, it was just a couple hours. In fact, it was the following hour after our show ended, they announced that Biden was going to speak on it. I thought, okay, they know it's a problem, and they're trying to get ahead of it. And then he comes out and he says, this is not a bailout. When he said, this is not a bailout, that's when you know
it's a bailout.
They're having to get out in front of it, because by that time, Janet Yellen had already said multiple times, it's not a bailout. And then he came out, and it was first thing. He was at that podium pretty early in the day saying, well, this is not a bailout. Yeah, it's a bailout.
It was early, because I woke up early. I couldn't believe it. I was this is that time of the year when, and I'm sure anybody who works this shift, you know it, when the clocks change, even that hour makes a difference, and I'm just not sleeping as long as I normally do. And so I was up pretty early, and I went, what, he spoke already? What was it?
No,
it was like 9:30 my time, and which is 10:30 Eastern.
It was during the 8 o'clock hour Central, and
wow,
the alert, the White House announced in the 6 o'clock hour Central that he was going to speak on it. And when that alert came across, I was like, all right, they're trying to get ahead of it. Janet Yellen was trying to get ahead of it. They're sending out, gosh, if the president is going out this early, they've got to be concerned.
And Wall Street Journal broke it down, just on the FDIC alone could be $15 billion.
Yeah, right.
And the fact is, what they're saying is, you know, I'll read it directly here. It goes, because this is the good stuff here. The White House says special assessments will be levied on banks to recoup their losses. That means bank customers with less than $250,000 in deposits will indirectly pay for this through higher bank fees. In other words, this is an income transfer from average Americans to deep pocket investors.
Yeah.
I feel like the guy sitting, you know, with the sign in front, you know, tell me where I'm wrong or whatever, or change my mind,
you know,
on that. You can't win that one because it's people, you know, they figure that out. It says also Mr. Biden claimed investors in the bank will not be protected. They knowingly took a risk, and when the risk didn't pay off, investors lose their money. Well, that's how capitalism works. Yes, ordinarily, but the Federal Reserve's new emergency lending facility, we talked about this, will ensure banks don't have to take losses, liquidating their bonds to meet deposit redemptions. Well, that's a bailout.
Right.
Many banks have hedged their interest rate risk and diversified their deposits, which comes at a business cost.
Yes.
But some like SVB and Signature did not. The Fed is now saying that's okay. We've got your back.
Well, this
you can continue to do wrong.
This is, again, this is the Fannie and Freddie scenario in mortgages. This is the federal government taking risk out of the game. If there's no risk in the game, who wins? The wealthy.
Well, yeah,
it's a huge bailout for the wealthy, and that's what it was before. And this is why we got in 2009, after 2009, and we got it for a while. In fact, to some degree, we still hear it occasionally. And that is, well, the banks got their bailout, and I want mine. So the mentality was, well, my gosh, you're only helping the wealthy here. And line it out. You know, politically, you can't get away from that. You're not going to show up in East Palestine. You're not going to go help the people there. You're not going to even pretend to care on something like that, which, by the way, also gives some cover to Norfolk Southern, because if you're not showing up for the people and throwing, you know, shade on a multi-billion dollar company, I'm just, again, we're playing the big populist liberal thing here, and you're going to bail out Silicon Valley and the wealthy and the Bitcoiners of the world. Well, what about the little guy? The little guy's going to pay more in banking fees. And East Palestine still doesn't know if they're going to be able to live where they live in the future. Hey, good job.
And then they bring this up in the Wall Street Journal, which is something that we brought up after 2008, 2009. The way that, you know, the Democrats claim they hate big banks, yet what they did by saying too big to fail was they gave the big banks an advantage over the medium to small banks. And remember the number of mergers in those medium to small banks and those that went out of business, or the mergers that happened because because they couldn't compete based on the fact that if you have the implicit, you'll always be bailed out.
Mm-hmm.
You can be more risky in your lending than a smaller medium bank.
Right.
And they bring this up right here. As he so often does, the president blamed the bank panic on the Trump administration, in this case for modifying some of the 2010 Dodd-Frank Act rules. He seems to be referring to the 2018 bipartisan banking law, which raised the threshold for systemically important financial institution classifications to $250 billion from $50 billion in assets. Now, that had nothing to do with what happened here, though.
Right.
Not even Barney Frank, the Dodd-Frank co-author, believes that is to blame. I don't know if using him for any reference, though, is...
Yeah, let's
but he writes, not. But even Barney Frank, the Dodd-Frank co-author, believes... not even he believes that's to blame. The point of the 2018 law was to ease compliance burdens on mid-sized banks that made them less competitive with the giants, which benefit from the lower cost of funding owing to their implicit government backstop, which means because the government has implied we will always save the big bank, they can do everything with more risk.
Yeah.
Excessive Dodd-Frank regulation was driving more deposits to big banks, as we have stated after 2008-2009. Before the 2018 law, most mid-sized banks had to comply with the same regulations as big banks, but these wouldn't have prevented either bank's failures from their risk management mistakes. The 2018 law didn't absolve mid-sized banks of the requirement to conduct quarterly liquidity stress tests to ensure that they could weather adverse market conditions and combined market and other stresses such as interest rate shocks. So there you go. But I mean, it was a bad day for the administration. But when he gave the statement and then turned around and walked out,
you have to ask this question:
Is there anything? Because that's the concern of people. Most people, they see the bank failure, they see this all going on.
Mm-hmm.
They're wondering: is there going to be a systemic, massive bank failure across this country? They don't know.
Right.
Well, he makes his statement. Nobody believes what he says. And then he turns around. People are screaming questions at him, opens a door, closes a door behind him, and walked out. You ask the question, is there anything that this president takes seriously enough that he cares about the American people enough to just answer questions of the press? And he won't do it.
He doesn't even pretend to care.
No.
He doesn't even do the Bill Clinton bite his lower lip, I feel your pain move. It's basically, screw your pain, I'm out of here.
866-90-RED-EYE.
It's not always easy to spring back from the harsh days of winter to warmer months ahead. From de-icing chemicals to hidden debris underneath snow and ice, winter conditions can do serious damage to your truck. Here's a must-do maintenance check to help you minimize downtime and stay rolling. Inspect your brake hoses, linings, and slack adjusters for any wear and tear. Listen for any air leaks that may have resulted from moisture freezing up in the system. Check slack adjusters for proper stroke and lubrication. And check your brake linings or pads to ensure proper thickness. This report is brought to you by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. Do you know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6. And help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye, if you'd like to get in. One of the things that the Wall Street Journal editorial makes, you know, is that President Biden tried to reassure Americans. This is how they started out. Biden tried to reassure Americans early Monday morning that the banking system is safe and not to worry about the failures of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Banks. Markets didn't believe him because bank stocks took another plunge with some 60 with some down 60% or more. And that's a very interesting point. That's why he was out there early.
Yeah.
And the markets didn't believe it.
Right.
And when you build up a resume of consistently lying to the American people, then if you go out and say something and you deny it, don't be surprised when people believe the opposite.
Yeah.
Because you're always lying about everything. Therefore, when you come out and try to do damage control,
Yeah.
You know, he never did this with, you know, East Palestine, whatever.
Right, and then, right.
But immediately he's out for this.
Yeah.
So they're trying to do damage control. So whatever comes out of his mouth, the markets think it's the opposite.
Well, because if there were a simple fear-driven run on banks, and I don't mean everybody running to every bank, but we just mentioned before the break, small banks. Imagine people went to the smaller banks and said, look, I'm nervous. I'm going to take my money across the street to Chase or Bank of America. I'm going to put it in a big name where I believe they have solid ground, sure footing, and all of that. If there were something, if something like that transpired, it wouldn't be what we saw with these individual banks in a matter of hours. It's going to happen over months or years, or mm-hmm. you know, it, depending on how you know how far the story goes. But if it, let's just say over the next 90 days, if that trend started to continue, that fear, it would drive more fear, and more people would be in line at those small banks, you know, moving their money to larger banks. Politically, that is crushing, and there's no doubt. Here's my question. Does the market believe that the federal government can actually do something about it, or does the market believe on banking that after the end of 2008 and into 2009, where they shoved money into all of the banks' tills and they were lying, they wouldn't tell anybody which banks were on the brink, you know, countrywide and all of those that were, you know, on the brink. Does the market trust the government in this case and believe that they have the answers,
If you were to ask me that, just, you know, at that point, I would say the fact that they're bailing out all the uninsured
mm-hmm.
deposits in there gives the indication that the government takes this so seriously that the banking system might be in trouble if you have to do this for that bank.
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yes.
Hours a night and still not enough. Listen to our podcast available on the app and on our website, redeyeradioshow.com.
And he's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Time constraints made it so I couldn't finish my statement.
Yeah, no, that happens.
But when you look at the president coming out yesterday, and again, immediately coming out, I mean, very early in the morning.
Yeah.
And you know, talking about, you know, the bailout that's not a bailout.
Right.
and the fact that you're going to protect the uninsured depositors of that bank. Let me just read this really quickly here. The FDIC's deposit insurance fund normally guarantees up to $250,000 in deposits, which protects small retail customers, including mom-and-pop businesses. Banks pay for this guarantee with insurance premiums, but the insurance fund isn't intended to backstop deposits of bigger customers with more capacity to weather losses if a bank goes under. Yet after venture capitalist, and then in parentheses, Democratic donors, and Silicon Valley politicians howled, the FDIC on Sunday announced it would cover uninsured deposits at SVB and Signature Bank under its systemic risk exception. Well, that's the entire point. If it isn't systemic through the banking industry, there is no reason. There's only two reasons you're doing this: to benefit the rich elite Democratic donors that have deposits, right?
Yep.
And because of the pressure coming from an extremely liberal part of the country, that's one, right? Or the other, if you're using the systemic risk exception, you're afraid that this could spread across the country. You're putting out the message that and especially because of the credibility issue that Biden has when you say no bailout and people say, well, no, it is a bailout because where does this money come from? It doesn't magically appear. Well, there are no taxpayer dollars. Well, not directly, but indirectly, yes, there will be taxpayer dollars because the people that are paying for this through bank fees are citizens of the United States. So what you're doing is you're taxing them through fees indirectly and not directly. People aren't stupid. They understand it. You're just trying to find another way to do it. And then when it comes to protecting, if you want to sell your assets and the government is protecting and guaranteeing you won't have a loss on it, that's another, you know, another bailout.
Right.
And the American public knows it. So then you ask the question, why is the president, why is Yellen, why are they all jumping on the fact that it's not a bailout when it is? Is the situation worse than they're saying? And that's what the investors are thinking. That's why the banks took a hit yesterday. Nobody believes what the president is saying and what Janet Yellen is saying.
And that's, you know, that was my question before the bottom of the hour. You know, after everything, but especially with this administration. You fold in what happened at the end of 2008 and 2009, but then you apply it to this particular administration and how much do the markets trust it? By the way, they knew they had an issue because the president spoke 30 minutes before the markets opened.
Yep.
Yeah. And that is, you know, they were trying to get ahead of it. They were trying to convince a market that I don't think trust this administration. They don't trust the scenario because what you can't, there are too many, first of all, there are a number of things that you can't predict. You can't right now gauge properly the fear. Only time can do that. And I mean the fear of the average depositor of, you know, of any given bank. And I don't sense that there is a great rising fear. But I do believe people gave it consideration during the day.
I agree with you on that because I don't believe that there's going to be a systemic failure or the major big banks are in trouble in this country.
No.
At the moment, presently.
I think where the concern is, well, I've been doing business with this smaller bank for a long time, and should I be concerned? There's the question. And even that, I don't think is at anywhere close to a panic level. I don't even know that I would use the word fear. But in their mind, they're going, well, wait a minute. And I'll fold this in. After Dodd-Frank, my bank that I've been with since it was a credit union years ago, 30 years almost, sold. You saw a lot of acquisitions and mergers of these smaller banks. They couldn't compete after Dodd-Frank. I'm still with that bank. That's my primary banking account. It's a smaller regional bank. I don't have a reason to. They offer some great benefits of banking there, so I don't have a reason. But it did cross my mind. I thought to myself, well, I'm confident the bank is solvent. But my question is everybody else confident? Because if people are questioning this, and I think here's what's going on. Anyone with an account, maybe a primary account in one of the smaller banks, the average person is probably watching and waiting to see where this goes. Mm-hmm. And their question would be, well, should I go ahead and move to a larger bank? Do I need to be on, you know, higher ground here? And I think that's where we're at. The problem here with what's going on in the particular banks that have failed and some others, a couple of others that are being watched right now is, all right, what is going to be the policy going forward? And are we taking risk out of the banking game?
Well, I think when it comes to, you know, we're talking financial itself. We all know that the administration lied about inflation.
Yeah. Right. You know?
Everything they told us about inflation, they were wrong on. And I'm talking about Yellen and Biden.
Yep.
And so they're the first two that come out. No, there's no problem. There's no problem. But we're bailing out people that don't normally get bailed out.
Right.
Why are we doing that?
Right.
What is the concern?
Right.
So you're afraid of this? I guess my point is that any, if we don't put it to the level of concern, any pondering,
yeah, right.
Any pondering of what's going on, a lot of it can be based on the reaction of government to it. Because what do we as financial people, and we're all financial people, what's the one thing that we fear the most? Confusion and not knowing.
The unknown, yeah.
The unknown.
Yeah, the muddy water.
The unknown, the muddy water,
yeah.
which is why you and I go back to 2008, 2009,
mm-hmm.
and we thought it was wrong to what they did. You know, you let the natural organic economics of the situation work. It might have been worse up front. We might have had more unemployment up front. You and I have acknowledged that. It might have been worse up front, but you would know where you were. You didn't go through wondering, is the entire bank system about to collapse in 2008, 2009, because they're forcing money on everybody so the public doesn't know which is actually the bad banks.
Right.
Well, that's idiotic.
Yeah.
Knowledge is key. If you know what to avoid and then you know the situation, but it's almost, you know, everything in the government manipulation, whether it's what we have seen in the, you know, what we have seen in the Fed manipulation of the dollar through printing money to buy our own debt, you know, the information that we were given on inflation from the Treasury Secretary and Biden, consistently wrong all the time.
Right.
But all this, and we talk about 2008, 2009, it was caused by government interference.
Yes. Take Fannie and Freddie out of the equation.
And so I will ask this question to any financial person out there. Is your fear the natural organic economics of financial system collapsing or government screwing it all the hell up?
Right.
And I dare say there's a significant portion, and I may be included in that. You may be able to tell that by my passion here, that government screws it up way more than if it was just left organically to go by itself.
Well, and that's it, because the expansion of the FDIC involvement here out of the equation. Take this mindset out of the equation of what we're dealing with Silicon Valley Bank. If they believed for a moment, hey, the government is going to leave us high and dry, we're on our own here, there would have been a proper auditing along the way. There would have been different moves along the way. And also by depositors, there probably would have been different consideration. But when you bring socialism into banking, you muddy the waters. You're basically saying, hey, the government's got your back, and we're going to take risk out of the game. Go for it. And if something happens and you fall, we'll be right here.
Yeah.
And when that happens, the red flags go away. Oh, you can still see them, but you laugh at them. It's not the alert that it would be. It's not panic mode. And how do you avoid panic mode? You stay on sure footing along the way. So you audit during the entire process if you're a bank.
Mm-hmm.
You look at those deposits. And if you're a depositor, you look at it and say, look, I've got a lot of deposits, or I got a lot more than $250,000 here. I need to make sure that I'm covered. However I'm going to do that, I need to make sure that my business is not going to be left high and dry. So I need to diversify in any way that I can and make different decisions here. That's how you avoid the panic. Well, there is no panic, because big government is going to be there to make sure that if you trip and fall, we pick you right back up.
Like I say, it's disingenuous when they say it's not a bailout, because of course it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing. When you lie up front about, well, it's not a bailout what we're doing, everybody knows it's a bailout.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it's not, because the taxpayer will not have to pay anything. Oh, through taxes they might not have to.
Right, right.
But then again, if the government is backing up their selling of their assets,
yeah.
Well, where does that money come from?
Right.
That isn't through bank fees. That might be direct taxpayer dollars, would it not?
It would be through the purchases of those policies, those FDIC policies of those members of the FDIC. So those members pay for that, but they increase those rates on those policies. So
No, I'm not talking about protecting the deposits.
Mm.
I'm talking about where the, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, that on those long-term assets that they had to sell.
Oh, that the bank had to sell to cover the withdrawals.
To cover the withdrawals
that they lost money on. Yeah.
The feds have come in and said, we'll protect it. We'll protect it where you don't lose on those sales.
Oh, no. That's got to be
taxpayer dollars.
Well, how do you protect it? If you're making those losses whole, then do you do that with money?
Money. Right. So if they're lying about that, if they're lying saying it's not a bailout, when it is a bailout.
Right.
Now, it may not be
because
that's the whole point, because we said, because they came back immediately when it's not a bailout because we're not protecting the shareholders. No, but you're protecting the uninsured depositors and you're protecting the banks.
Yes.
But for the bad decisions or the financial decisions that they made, you're bailing them out, and that has to come from taxpayer dollars.
Well, because it's the same type of speak that Fauci uses. You know, well, no, that's not what we call it. No, that's not. It doesn't matter what you call it. If you're trying to split hairs and say, well, no, we covered that. We didn't cover this. So there's still taxpayer money going to it. Because that's the only question. Who was going to pay for it?
You saw the story. There was duplicate funding. They may have given Wuhan Lab more than they were supposed to. That story, we'll have that story coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just popped into my head now when you brought that up. I went, oh, I just saw that story yesterday that did duplicate funding. Did they pay them twice for certain things? It's like, oh my God.
And I'm sure we'll get the truth from China as to whether they
received
more than they should have.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carlin, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, yeah, I would say that one of the major problems is a complete lack of credibility in the federal government to anybody who has anything to do with the finances of the United States.
Right.
Based on the fact that they got everything wrong on inflation, and we believe also lied about what they knew on inflation. So when you come out, the first thing you heard yesterday, on Sunday, it's not a bailout. It's not a bailout. It's not a bailout.
Right.
And that's when I woke up to come in yesterday was when all that information was out there. And I went, wait a minute. What do you mean it's not a bailout? If you're covering the deposits of the uninsured, that's not part of the deal with the FDIC. Somebody has to pay somewhere.
Right.
So it is a bailout.
Right.
Somebody is paying for somebody else.
Yeah,
it's not money growing on trees,
right?
And then looking at the other thing that they did, which says, okay, any losses of you selling your asset in order to pay off the depositors will also cover that. That's a second bailout. Why? Well, they're lying.
Yeah.
Why are they lying? Would be the next question.
Exactly.
Top of the hour news is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit howesproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Good morning. Thank you for being here. Download our Red Eye Radio app today, and you can listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. This was interesting. Senator Mark Kelly from Arizona asked during a meeting about the bailout of the Silicon Valley Bank whether social media could be censored to prevent misinformation going out that could lead to a bank run, according to reports. Michael Schellenberger, an independent journalist, we played his testimony. Well, not all of his testimony, but we played his opening remarks and some of his testimony late last week when he was before Congress. But Michael Schellenberger reports, an independent journalist who reports on the Twitter files and has contributed to Fox News, reported that Kelly asked the Federal Reserve, Treasury Department, and Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation about censorship measures during a meeting on Sunday. Republican House members on the call confirmed with Schellenberger's publication, public on Substack, that a Democratic senator asked about censoring social media companies, including Representative Thomas Massie, though Kelly's name was not specifically noted. So there you go. Be interesting if he did ask that question, because if a Republican asked it, probably would be, do you plan on censoring disinformation there? But you never hear from Mark Kelly on anything. I mean, that's the point. And let's be honest. What has caused more panic? Should we? I'll answer this question. Should the president and the Treasury Secretary be censored and their comments not be broadcast because they may be causing panic?
Right. Well, I mean, how do you measure that, right? You could claim anything could cause panic. Well, they said don't panic. That caused panic. Well, actually, when Joe Biden steps up and says, don't panic, that's when I start to panic. So, you know, if you're going to try and jump out ahead of something, then, yeah, I'm definitely, you know, in that category, depending on who's talking. I'm concerned about why they're talking, not just what they're saying. So, yeah, I think we should monitor everybody. We shouldn't. Only Red Eye Radio should be broadcast. And if the president wants us to put a message out, then he can send it to us. And we'll gladly put it somewhere. Yeah, I love that. You know, this is the era of what? Misinformation, disinformation, and this idea of controlling anything and everything, all thought.
You know, I want to go back to what we talked about yesterday, you know, what caused it. And Andy Kessler in the Wall Street Journal, who killed Silicon Valley Bank, apparently no one at the firm perceived any risk from the Fed raising interest rates. And we explained what happened yesterday, as he does here. He said, let's go back. In January of 2020, SVB had $55 billion in customer deposits on its balance sheet. By the end of 2022, that number had exploded to $186 billion. Yes, SVB was a victim of its own success. These deposits were often from initial public offerings and other deals. SVB banked almost half of all the IPO proceeds in the last 2 years. Most startups had a relationship with the bank. That's a lot of money to put to work. Some was lent out. But with soaring stock prices and near zero interest rates, no one needed to take on excessive debt. There was no way SVB was going to initiate $131 billion in new loans. So the bank put some of this new capital into higher-yielding long-term government bonds and $80 billion into 10-year mortgage-backed securities, paying 1.5% instead of short-term treasuries paying 0.25%. This was a mistake. This was mistake number one. SVB reached for yield just as Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers did in back in 2000, in the 2000s, with few loans These investments were the bank's profit center. SVB got caught with its pants down as interest rates went up. Now, this is the interesting part here. Everyone except SVB management, it seems, knew interest rates were heading up. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell had been shouting this from the mountaintops. Yet SVB froze and kept business as usual, borrowing short-term from depositors and lending long-term without any interest rate hedging. The bear market started in January of 2022, 14 months ago. Surely it shouldn't have taken more than a year for management at SVB to figure out that credit would tighten and the IPO market would dry up, or that companies would need to spend money on salaries and cloud services. Nope, and that was mistake number two. SVB misread customers' cash needs. Risk management seemed to be an afterthought. The bank didn't even have a chief risk officer for 8 months last year. As customers asked for their money, SVB had to sell $21 billion in underwater longer-term assets with an average interest rate of about 1.8%. The bank lost $1.8 billion on the sale and tried to raise more than $2 billion to fill that hole. That loss flagged that something was wrong. Venture capitalists, including Peter Thiel, suggested the companies in their portfolio should withdraw their money and put it somewhere safer. On Thursday, the dam broke, and there was no way to cover billions in withdrawal requests. Mistake three was not quickly selling equity to cover losses. The first rule of survival is to keep selling equity until investors or depositors no longer fear bankruptcy. Private equity firm General Atlantic apparently made an offer to buy $500 million of the bank's common stock Friday morning. I'd have offered $3 billion for half the company. Where was Warren Buffett or J.P. Morgan? Before they could get a deal together, the FDIC took over to protect up to $250,000 for each depositor. Larger uninsured deposits are frozen since the bank took a 9% haircut in the $21 billion in bond sale. That could mean uninsured depositors might get 90 cents on a dollar, but it could take months or years. So venture capitalists are getting emergency funding requests. So there you go. You know, it's and I believe that was before, because this was on the 12th he wrote this.
All right.
This was before they decided to bail out all the depositors, I think. But he was stating, goes, this is, and we talked about this yesterday, what went wrong, and that's the whole point. Why didn't anybody see this coming? There's a lot of criticism of the San Francisco Fed. Why didn't they see this coming?
Right. Well, because it's a high-profile bank in the way that, you know, it's not just the 16th largest, but a high-profile bank for the nature of what they did and who banked with them. When you say Silicon Valley, the San Francisco Fed knows exactly. I mean, this is there is no mystery here. It's not like some small bank that nobody was watching or had a reason to watch. How would you not monitor this bank? How would you not monitor that activity? How would you not audit and look and say, how would there not be an internal audit to say, hey, what if this were to happen? Where would we be? Because if you didn't plan for any scenario, if you didn't have a plan, if you didn't have consideration for any scenario, then you're assuming that you can predict the future. Basically dismissing, well, that would never happen. Well, this would never happen. And there you are. I don't know why or how something like that happens. and how the San Francisco Fed didn't see it coming, didn't ask questions early on. When you look at startups, when you look at IPOs, when you look at, you know, tech, you saw over the last year that venture capitalists were not shelling out the money that they had been for big tech or small tech. Well, what does that mean? That means the companies that are doing business, that are growing, they're going to have to invest their own money. They're going to start using more and more of that. Well, where do they bank? What does that mean? You know, that's the problem that you have here, is that it should have been one of those. The bank itself, think about this, the nature of the bank itself should have been a red flag, in that it should have been one to watch because it had so much exposure to a certain type of depositor and investor. And how were you not watching the markets on that? How were you not looking, yeah, going, okay, if this happens, if this shifts in this sector, then that could affect that bank disproportionately. But that's the whole point, in that the nature of Silicon Valley Bank itself is a red flag to begin with. So you watch that in a way that you probably wouldn't because of the nature of the sector that does exactly, the banking right, with
right,
them.
Right. Which isn't a huge diversity of,
right,
of deposits.
Right. And so when you look at that and you say, okay, all right, wow, okay, tech has taken a hit. It is within your purview at the San Francisco Fed to say, if big tech has taken a hit, if venture capitalists are saying, we're going to slow the roll on big tech, what banks that are here in the region that we cover would be affected? The first one,
yeah,
is Silicon Valley Bank.
And especially when you find out, you know, that they bought, you know, long-term bonds.
Yeah,
they were,
right,
paying a percent and a,
right,
half. And,
right.
And you knew the interest rates. And that's the point, that did they not know what Powell was going to do?
Right.
They didn't recognize, well, that. See, everybody else did.
And that's the point, is that if you're assuming, if you didn't see the red flag, what it tells me is that, because I don't believe that. I believe you saw the red flag and dismissed it. And what I said earlier is, well, it assumes that you can tell, predict the future. In other words,
right, right,
where, yeah, the Fed's never going to, you know, Powell's not going to. You don't know that. You're planning for every contingency. You have an off-ramp in every case. And if you don't there inside the organization, then how do they not ask questions at the Fed, at the San Francisco Fed? How do they not make a call and go, hey, we're taking a look at basically your entire foundation here and the nature of your bank, and here are our concerns.
By the way, Cramer got blasted yesterday on a number of fronts. Jim Cramer,
yeah,
on CNBC.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Was last month one of his nine top stocks.
Yeah.
was SVB,
right,
just last month.
Right. I saw some tweets from CNBC yesterday morning, and it was right after the president stepped out and spoke on it. And I thought, and it involved Cramer, and I was like, this could be a good time to take a week off for Jim Cramer. I'm just saying.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Leased owner-operators should be aware of four common revenue myths, lest you fall into the trap of mistaking revenue for profit. Myth one, concentrate on increasing revenue because costs will take care of themselves. This is not true, as costs are fundamental to the profit equation and the area where owners exert the most control to improve. Myth two, more revenue per mile is the answer to all problems. Though carrier pay packages differ in structure, revenue per mile really doesn't change much from company to company. But there can be a big difference in miles, overall gross revenue, reimbursements, and fees. Myth three, all you have to do to be successful is run a lot of miles. In reality, revenue is only half of the profit equation. Costs are the other half. It's possible to generate a lot of revenue, yet spend $1.10 to make every dollar. Myth 4. You can tell how well you're doing by the size of your settlement check. The settlement check is only a part of the success picture. Miles driven, loads hauled, conditions, mechanical problems, time off, and especially costs all have to be considered. Owner-Operator Business 101 is provided by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, I want to play this audio because it was from MSNBC, and Jen Psaki was on, and this is before the president spoke, where she actually says, it's important to know the president doesn't do anything before 9 a.m.
Yeah.
It's exactly what we said. Mm-hmm. There was such a sense of urgency to get a message out, but the message that he got out, I don't think helped at all. And she sort of makes the point that we made. There was such a sense of urgency for him to make the statement, then turn around as these reporters are screaming questions, what does this mean? And he just walks out.
Yeah,
shows,
right.
To me, indicated, you're just putting out a statement. You're claiming there's no bailout. Obviously, there's a bailout. And then you're just walking away.
Yeah.
There was no sense of confidence built in by that.
No.
But here it was.
And Jen Psaki, of course, we know we're going to hear from the president in just a couple hours. He's going to address the nation this morning before heading to the West Coast. I know you played a role in communicating during the Obama White House when they had to deal with the aftermath and the heart of the 2008-2009 financial collapse. Mm-hmm. So what should the president's message be from today? What sort of steady signals should the White House be trying to send?
Well, once the policy decisions have been made, which they were over the weekend, which you and Steve spoke to, the key for the president is calming the public. Because as Steve said, the banks are opening, the markets will be open, and what he needs to project to the public is, we've got this. We have a plan. We made some decisions. We are addressing this, and that's what people need to hear from him. Now, it's important to note, President Biden does nothing at 9 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, I actually said that earlier. Yeah, you know? I mean, it was clear they wanted to make some kind of statement to get ahead of the market's opening. The timing was very obvious, but the effort was horrible.
Yeah.
And that goes back to my question earlier. And because I don't believe that the market has any trust in this administration. And the reason is because they don't know what they can, you know, trust. They don't know who they can believe. The president isn't going to give them any consolation here. The Treasury Secretary has been known to lie. Jerome Powell, who knows? You saw the talk yesterday that now the pressure is on for him to hit the brakes and do no more rate increases for the rest of the year.
I saw that, yep. Too, that, well, yep. maybe 2.5.
Uh-huh.
Like, what changed in the last couple of days?
Exactly.
Political pressure?
Yep.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Call and join the conversation. 1-866-90-RED-EYE. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You know, I'd mentioned this about a half hour ago at what CBS was reporting yesterday. And this is the problem that this administration has. This is the problem that Fauci has right now.
Hmm.
This is a I'm going to play just part of a report from CBS. Remember, this is CBS. Now, we do criticize when the mainstream media, and Newsbusters does a great job looking at and our friend over there, Kevin Tober, they do a great job, and they have the hardest job on the planet because they have to consistently watch the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how they keep their sanity.
I don't either.
But this Newsbusters saw yesterday and posted this, and this is CBS on the Wuhan lab.
Mm.
And duplicate payments? Here we go.
All right.
Records reviewed by CBS News indicate the U.S. government may have paid twice for projects at the Wuhan labs through the National Institutes of Health and the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID.
So categorized it and then drilled down from there.
This included possible medical supplies, equipment, travel, and salaries.
So what I found so far is evidence that points to double billing, potential theft of government funds. It is concerning, especially since it involves dangerous pathogens and risky research.
While intelligence agencies can't agree on how the pandemic that killed more than 1.1 million Americans started, the FBI and now the Energy Department have found an accidental lab leak is plausible, not potentially through infected animals at a nearby market. At recent congressional hearings into the origins of COVID-19, the former CDC director said money from multiple U.S. government agencies supported high-risk virus research in Wuhan. Sources familiar with the grant records did not dispute CBS News' reporting.
There you go.
Hmm.
That's the problem that Fauci has. Now it's not only funding research, but double billing, paying twice. Double the taxpayer dollars going to the Wuhan lab, which is to the Chinese.
Right.
Not good.
Well, who was writing the check? Was it Hunter? He may have forgotten that he paid the first time. You know, this is, and I make the joke, but this is part of the problem. Because this whole thing now, the Wuhan lab thing, is not... This is coming back like a really bad political nightmare, only because the people want the truth, which is, by the way, the very reason that it should be alive and breathing, because we should want the truth as to how this began. But politically, it is a nightmare, and they can't get away from it. I think they thought they had won that conversation forever as well.
You know, we said that, look, the argument that you had that can convince the American public, and I see this more often now, maybe I didn't, you know, we said it, and then maybe I recognized it because we said it. Maybe it was out there before.
Mm.
But when we said, look, you're talking about a virus that has killed 1.13 million Americans.
Mm-hmm.
It's killed a million Americans. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene said murdered. She was incorrect on that.
Yeah.
It's not murdered. And then she corrected it later on, said killed. I'm like, come on, get that straight.
Yeah.
But it killed 1.1 million Americans. Now, I don't know if she was trying to make the case that the Chinese released it deliberately or whatever, but she corrected it to killed later on in her statement. But I did notice that it's like, no, that's... Murder is when a person kills another person. So.
Right. Yeah.
But when you look at, when you make that argument, that's an argument the Democrats can't win. That's an argument Fauci can't win. People want to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And now, you know, again, the mainstream media hasn't covered it like they should, but that was a Catherine Herridge report, by the way.
Mm.
But CBS covering it. And that was on CBS mornings.
Right.
So this is during the cat video show.
Right.
And because it's something that's concerned, it touched. And I know that some people misrepresented what we said, you know, but we had said that, that's an important issue because everyone was affected by it. We're talking about the important issues that Republicans should hit because of how many people it affected. We didn't say that they shouldn't cover all the issues. We said where they should be stronger is covering the issues that Americans care about. One is inflation.
Yeah, right.
One is the origins of COVID, because it's still out there.
Yeah.
I saw an entire family yesterday in the store where all wearing masks.
Yeah.
All the kids, the parents, was like they had like five kids and the parents, and it's just like, okay. But, and you look at that too, you know, we talked about the banks, you know, and what happened with Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. And the fact that there's no credibility in those people that are in charge of our finances in the United States. Nobody trusts Janet Yellen. Nobody trusts Biden. Nobody trusts this administration when it comes to inflation, because you can go through all the things that they were wrong on and all the misinformation, malinformation. I like that one, malinformation.
Oh, yes.
It sounds like malware. So maybe.
Yeah.
Malinformation. Also known as lies that they peddled, you know, during all of it. There's no credibility, so there's no credibility there.
They were imprecise.
They were exactly. Well, there's been a lot of impreciseness here when it comes to COVID, because people know it.
Yeah.
The vast majority of Americans know that the federal government was wrong on the vast majority of claims that they made about COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading a story yesterday. I'll find it, you know, where Americans are raging at companies because they're not getting what they want. You know, they want better customer service. And it's something that you and I have said all along. When it comes to what we get in the private sector, we demand excellence.
Oh, yeah.
And in government, seems like at times we just don't give a damn. Yet we give them more as a single entity than we give anybody else.
Right.
Unless you're buying a car that year. But even a car, most people make payments, so you're still not every year, for the most part, giving what you give the federal government.
Mm.
That's if you pay taxes.
Yeah, right.
Since what? You be careful now. Republicans, don't say this. It'll get you in trouble. But what is it? Over half of Americans don't pay any federal taxes.
Yeah, right.
Remember that? Remember, Rob, you got into that one?
Yeah.
You can't say that. That'll come back to haunt you, but... Yeah, I just thought it was interesting to play that because it was that's another problem that they have, and that's not going away.
No.
And we saw Fauci the other day, and we tore apart what he had to say. It was like, wow. He's now trying to make the case that, oh, it's always been a possibility that we thought it could be a lab leak. And, well, you know, it's still natural origin if the lab leak came from a virus out there that didn't pass human to human very well, but then we tinkered with it a bit, and then it became
manipulated a bit,
but still maybe it was being able to pass from human to human.
That's still in nature,
which then came from an animal, and it was like he was tying himself up into huge knots.
He sounds like a teenager who's been found out with all the proof laying right there on the kitchen table. You've been caught, and now you can't do anything. You got nowhere to go now. The darling of the left, the COVID darling of the left. And it's maddening. It's maddening that we didn't insist on the truth from the beginning.
We don't need to know the truth. Everybody just stay home. Stay home. Stay quiet. Don't talk. You could spread it. No talking. Don't listen to talk radio. You could spread it.
Tom Brady's in a park. Send the cops. Remember that story?
Yes. Dude moves to Tampa. It's like, you know, after living in New England for years, he moves to Tampa. Like, I can go outside in the winter. Goes for a jog in the park. SWAT team comes in. Maybe it wasn't the SWAT team. Maybe it wasn't.
That may be right-wing exaggeration there.
Be.
Just
maybe.
A little bit.
I don't know that it wasn't.
SEAL Team 6 came in.
Black helicopters land.
Mr. Brady.
You know, I
yeah.
The thing is, we do have to go back. I mean, we should revisit 3 years ago, right now.
Yeah, that seems like light years ago.
Yeah, because it was 3 years ago, right now. And remember, in March and April, especially March and April of that year, and even into May. Remember, it was still, you know, if you walk outside, make sure you stay 6 feet away. Make sure you're not in groups of more than four.
Yeah.
I remember here, because in my county, remember, you couldn't be out. Like, you couldn't have four kids playing football, or five kids playing, throwing the football to each other. It could only be a maximum of four. People forget about those. That was outside, not inside, outside.
Yeah.
And so the suggestion was, don't play outside. If you're going to play, if you want to have five kids, don't play outside. Go into your house and play inside. The virus, apparently, well, doesn't the virus travel better in the inside than the outside? We're not going to discuss that. Sir, you're off social media.
And so now you have Whitmer saying that her COVID restrictions in hindsight, quote, don't make a lot of sense, end quote. They didn't then either. What do you mean in hindsight? At the moment, they didn't make sense. And you know it. This is, the left is scrambling right now because politically, COVID is, and their behavior during COVID, their response to COVID is coming back to haunt them in every single possible way. Spending, boom, inflation. Well, inflation, we'll get on top of it. We'll raise the interest rates. Nope. Can't do that. But what about inflation? Don't worry about inflation. You'll tank the economy. I mean, and the lab leak theory now has more, it has more people on it than ever. And nobody on the left is even trying to deny it.
Yeah. It's a great point. Yeah, we talked about this last week. Where's the defense of Fauci? Where are those people out there defending him? You don't see it.
Right. Even Fauci with this, well, you know, you manipulated just a little bit, but it's still nature. Even if it was leaked unintentionally, it's still nature. What? You sound like a teenager that just got caught doing something they're not supposed to be doing.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Tons of things to talk about.
Mm.
Well, let's take a look at what The View was talking about.
Okay.
I mean, we'll do that coming up on the top of the hour.
Okay.
See what was going on with the View. There's a poll on Pete Buttigieg.
Oh, yeah?
And his performance.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that's going well.
Well, not really. liberal Democrats raging over a Biden and the move to the center over the last couple of weeks by the president. We'll get to that. I'm reading the headline here. Ed Markey rages at Biden over disastrous decision to approve an oil drilling project here. Mm-hmm. Well, he knows the election is coming up. And I know one thing, the Republicans will be pounding where he said, no more drilling.
Yeah. Yeah. Look. It's clear that he's running. And as you mentioned earlier, for those that didn't catch it at the beginning of the show, you can always go back and listen to it on our podcast. But you made the good point that, look, these are These are not big, massive moves, but politically, they make a statement. And I think the D.C. crime bill about face, it was so awkward. It was so horrible. Okay, when Chuck Schumer has to come in days after it happens and says, you know, he's basically, oh, no, I support the president. And, you know, when he had been MIA up until that moment, you know things are bad.
Oh, the House Democrats felt so burned by the president on that.
Only because they got burned.
Well, they said he hung us out to dry.
That's right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across USA and around the planet, we are Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when and where you choose. If you can't listen live overnight. All right, this is the entertainment portion of the show. Ready for this audio cut?
Sure.
All right, let's see what was going on The View.
Okay. I don't know what the hell is wrong with Democrats. Listen, here's the bottom line, guys. Joe Biden's going to be your nominee. Stop talking about how old he is. And Kamala Harris is going to be your vice president. So stop fretting, stop wringing your hands, and get behind your ticket, because on the other side, your alternative is Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis. Yeah. So you tell me what you prefer. And I love this. I love that they said in this story, I don't know if it's true, that Kamala's not, that Madam Vice President is not responding to the calls from Senator Warren. Good. If they are going to be doing this, don't show up to fundraise for them. Don't show up to campaign for them. Don't pick up their phone calls. Get with the program. Listen, you know what they're doing? They're playing right into the hands of Fox News. Yeah. Yeah. Fox News every single day goes after Kamala Harris, trying to portray her as inept and some kind of bumbling fool. She's not. That's not who she is. And so Democrats have got to come out and reinforce Kamala. They've got to stop playing into the hands of these people who cannot stand that she is the first woman of color vice president, and don't want her to succeed. And by the way, her husband is great, too.
I'm surprised that there's concern. I think it has a lot to do with this. She's a black woman. Black women get everything done. We've saved this country's democracy for
centuries. She's obviously amazing, but what specifically?
But, well...
Like, no, I mean,
where shall I start? I mean, she was in the Senate, of
but
course.
But no, I mean, as Vice
General,
President, of course,
as Vice
she's
President,
highly.
She's the Inflation Reduction Act. I mean, was the face of Roe v. Wade. I mean, no, the list goes on and on. I'd like to ask you, what did Pence do?
All right, they couldn't name what she did. That's why they went to, well, what did Pence do? They could not name anything that she had done. And that was the problem. And I love the Inflation Reduction Act. She had nothing to do with the Inflation Reduction Act.
Well, I do find it refreshing at The View that they recognized how bigoted Democrats are.
Yes, because their concern was that Democrats aren't getting on board, and it has to do with racism.
Know that the people that you just heard from The View understand what they did.
Now, we've talked about this a lot when Kamala Harris did it, when she was out early, blamed sexism and racism.
Right.
Hillary was still the best. Was still the best.
Oh, yeah, sure. Nobody tops that.
That women just do what their men tell them do. That's why she didn't become president.
Their sons or their bosses or their boyfriend or their husband. And then she looked over and said, right, Bill?
I've always said this about The View, though, is The View, and I don't know whether this was done on purpose by the producers or not, but the human beings that they chose to be on The View, the liberals that they chose to be on The View, perpetuate the worst and incorrect stereotype of women.
Yeah.
That there's no critical thinking, they're irrational and emotional.
Yep.
And I'll state that over and over again.
Right.
It is the incorrect stereotype of women, but it is the stereotype, which is why, as we've said before, you tell me another show that has to have lawyers in real time monitor. Tell me another show in the history of the United States that has to have lawyers watching in real time consistently in order, because of their emotional outbursts that turn into defamatory lies or such outrageous anti-Semitism that the lawyers have to give them a statement to read after the next commercial break.
Yeah.
But I just love it. She's not an inept and bubbling fool. And if that's not who she is, and if you say she is, then you're just a racist and a sexist.
Right. And again, they start by addressing Democrats. They're addressing Democrats.
Yes, exactly. Democrats are racist and sexist because the popularity of Kamala Harris is not there. It's not there for Biden in the Democratic Party.
No, no.
The majority of Democrats don't want Biden to run. The majority of Democrats do not want Kamala Harris to run.
Nope.
You are a bunch of racist and sexist.
Yep. How dare you?
So, and then Anna Navarro said that Fox News every single day goes after Kamala Harris trying to portray her as inept and some kind of bumbling fool. She's not. Well, are Democrats then watching Fox News on a consistent basis and Fox News is convincing them of that?
Right.
Is that what's going on? I mean,
is that what's happening?
Yeah. That's. My God.
Nothing like being told you're stupid, I guess.
Well, you know what I like the best part? When she was saying that she's not some type of... Did you hear the crowd wasn't like cheering like crazy. They weren't going, yeah. I mean, with the passion that Navarro was, she's not, she's not, she's not. That's not who she is. There was like polite applause, but it wasn't wild and crazy like you would expect.
No.
Why? Because Democrats believe that she is inept and some kind of bumbling fool.
Yep.
And by the way, the same thing with Biden.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Democrats, the polling would show that they want him to run again.
Yep.
Yeah, they'll still vote for him, but they don't. They believe that they're worried. And they're especially worried if DeSantis wins the primaries.
Well, they're very concerned about DeSantis, and they have been for a while.
But
now it's getting closer to the announcement if he's going to run. Where then it'll be just a few months before he announces.
And by the way, the reason is simple: Democrats believe that Biden beat Trump once.
Yeah.
Biden will beat Trump again.
Yep.
That Trump will be his worst enemy.
Yep.
Well, look, I mean, you know, you look at Trump over the last. You see the rant he had about DeSantis and his book last Friday.
Yeah.
You know, he's just going crazy about that. I don't know any Republican that gives a damn who has more sales of the book, whether it's DeSantis or Trump. It's not an issue out there.
It really isn't.
If Trump blows this, he blows it for the same reason that we said he blew 2020.
Yeah, and the Wall Street Journal and others pointed out.
But we pointed out that All he has to do is talk about his accomplishments and what he has done. And for some damn reason, he just won't do it.
Repeat that over and over and over and stay on just that. You point out what Biden's doing wrong, of course, but you list your accomplishments. Those two fronts are the only thing you touch over and over, and the polls show you're the guy. And then in the general, you would beat Biden hands down.
And he just does not have the ability to do it.
Yeah, no, that's a unicorn.
He's done it at times.
Yeah.
You know, but he doesn't have the ability to do it
long term. It's a unicorn. Yeah. It's a unicorn.
Yeah, he can't do it. It's the same thing as, you know, the being in Iowa last night and the whole shortening to sanctimonious to sanctus. See, Brett Hume goes, yeah, nobody's going to understand. What the hell does that mean?
Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. And the stories on Trump is he's working so hard to come up with some name for DeSantis.
Yeah.
It's
honestly, you have to go because you have to go back. And as bad as Biden is, you still have to campaign like you're starting over. Because you are.
Yeah, it just.
And with your listed accomplishments, repeating them over and over again, and repeating the failures of the Biden presidency, you win the nomination, you win the general.
You don't even have to mention, until DeSantis gets in, I wouldn't even mention him.
I wouldn't even blink. Frankly, on every. Think about this. On every debate stage, he's the only one with presidential experience and a success story behind his presidency. The only one. Now, DeSantis comes in. I almost said DeSantis. Dang it. DeSantis comes in and... clearly, the guy can lead. He turned his entire state red. The guy can bring people together and form a consensus politically. He can get that done. But Trump is the only one on any of the stages that has a successful presidency in terms of the economy and everything else. He can win that. If only he could stay on that.
On his accomplishments.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And for some reason, he just believes that if he can come up with a new name to, you know, for DeSantis, that somehow that's going to stick. And, you know, and it's funny because DeSantis really doesn't mention any of it until he's asked a question. Right. Now, it may be a planned question, but still, it's a question. He just goes, well, you know, that's how he wishes to run a campaign, and you know, we look at the work that we've done here, and we'll present our resume to the American public.
Right.
And if he wishes to call names, that's fine. That's what he decides to do. And it's just like it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't stick to DeSantis. And it also sounds like this is the thing. As the one person who has presidential experience, there's a lack of seriousness in that narrative of name calling or being concerned about the sales of books. And DeSantis didn't sell that many. My book's not even out yet. And the media's trying to. Nobody gives a damn about your book or DeSantis's book.
Nobody's counting that. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Stop it. Talk about your accomplishments. And you can highlight your accomplishments based on the failure of the Biden administration. And that's why you, no matter who else decides to get in to this campaign, that's why you should be number one.
Well, has there ever been a greater juxtaposition in terms of actual presidential records of accomplishments than Trump versus Biden? Look at everything and put it on paper and look at that very clear difference.
Yeah. Well, number one. Inflation. You look at that spending that was done and you weren't in office, you can point to the American Rescue Act. You look at that to begin with and you say that's what even the Obama economists say caused the massive inflation.
Right.
We would have never done that. And now you see what's going on right now on foreign policy. All you have to do is point to Afghanistan and say we would have done it completely different. You know, we would have done it differently.
Yep.
You look at Ukraine and you say, I would have had, as he's been saying, he was actually on Ukraine. He simply says, and that's what you do politically. This wouldn't be happening if I was president. Just like he messed up Afghanistan, he's going to have us in a never ending war in Ukraine, whatever. But you can look at, and then the border. You've got it. So you take you take four topics right there. You take defunding the police as a fifth topic. You take solar and wind as the other one. So you've got six topics right there. All you do is pound them day in and day out because there's a 180-degree difference between what you believe and what Biden believes. I have the presidential experience. I have the foreign policy experience. So no matter who gets in, by the way, we're doing this off the top of our heads. There's no notes here.
Nope.
No matter who else gets in, I am the number one candidate to run for the Republican side.
And again, the only one who has a record, a proven record.
Right.
The only one. And all you have to do is repeat that record and then compare it to Biden's. That's the only thing you have to do.
Right. Because Nikki Haley and Ramaswamy are not even... You don't even have to mention them. You don't need to go after them. You don't even
blink. And frankly, if DeSantis gets in, you don't even. And with all due respect, my plan is proven. What I have done is proven. Blah blah. And congratulations to what he's done in Florida. What I've done is, and then you just repeat your accomplishments as president, and you ignore everything else. You don't have to attack anybody. You don't have to go after anybody because you're the only one with a proven record on that stage. Right. And when you get on the stage with Biden in the general, you're still the only one with a proven record of success as a president.
Yep.
Discipline.
And anything else. And I don't know if an indictment comes down, I don't know how that's going to affect the Republicans' view of him, but Trump is not as popular as he was 2 years ago.
No,
and in most polls, he doesn't have over 50%. And DeSantis hasn't started running and hasn't started campaigning
yet. Right.
Well, he has started campaigning, but unofficially.
Yeah. Right. Donors are lining up, and
exactly. So, but he hasn't officially announced. But it's really amazing that. You know, and I don't know whether it's his ego. I don't know what gets in the way of it. But what you've just heard here is if we were political consultants. And sometimes when we put on our political consultant hats, when we did it last week, people completely, for some reason, some of our listeners don't even understand what we're doing. And they think sometimes our political consulting advice is absolutely our particular belief in something. And it's not. It's just this is our political advice and the political weaknesses we see in any particular candidate. We do the same for Democrats and Republicans.
Right. Absolutely.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Cronin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I just have to play this little clip from Brett Baer yesterday, and Britt Hume was on with him about the president and his, the former president, Trump, and his nickname for Ron DeSantis.
Mm.
Here we go. Let's find it here.
Yeah, Ron DeSanctis. You think that's going to stick? The short Ron DeSanctimonious?
I don't think Ron DeSanctis sounds much different from Ron DeSantis. I'm not sure what the point of it is. I don't think that hurts him in any way. What does it mean?
What does it mean?
Oh, so bad.
You know, and look, there are a number of things that worked in the past. maybe with a number of people. They got some attention. They got some free press. Those things are now way off the table. They're not even, because everything right now, everything at the forefront is about the economy, is about the border being broken. It's about the fact that we have a current commander-in-chief that has no idea what he's doing. And all of that can be solved, and Trump can run. He could run a very strict campaign of his accomplishments versus Biden's failures, but I don't believe he will.
A threat to democracy if you don't download our app, Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You know, I saw this on Twitter yesterday, and I just went, wow, we had covered this when it happened, but I forgot about it. Glenn Greenwald put this out yesterday, and he was using this in reference to the Dominion and Smartmatic lawsuit against Fox.
Okay.
And he said, and he writes, before Fox and Carlson's lawyers, Tucker Carlson's lawyers, raised this common, before Fox and Carlson's lawyers raised this commonplace defense that his statements aren't taken literally, and apparently that was in some brief, according to Glenn Greenwald, that, okay, you know, hey, my statements aren't taken literally, what I actually say. MSNBC and Maddow's lawyers raised exactly the same defense to get her out of the defamation lawsuit, and the corporate media never mentions it. Now, this is fascinating because we have always said it's very, very tough when you get into, you know, presidential elections and things like that about what is considered defamation and what is not. Now, Rachel Maddow made her incorrect accusation against OAN, One American News.
Mm.
And she devoted a segment in 2019 accusing OAN of being a paid propaganda outlet for the Kremlin, discussing a Daily Beast article which noted that one reporter was a Russian national and was simultaneously writing copy for a Russian-owned outlet, Sputnik, on a freelance contract. Maddow escalated the allegation greatly into a broad claim about OAN's real identity and purpose. In this case, she announced the most pro-right-wing news outlet in America really literally is paid Russian propaganda, end of quote.
Hmm.
Now, in response, OAN sued Maddow. And you can look at this and say, okay, they're two media organizations going back and forth.
Right.
And that's separate from going after a company that isn't in the opinion business, like a Smartmatic or Dominion. But the fact is, you could say, well, she's making a claim that could hurt their bottom line, their advertising, which would be the same as Dominion and Smartmatic, correct?
Of course, everything, you know, here's a Captain Obvious statement. It depends on the judge you get, right? But
you're right.
But the precedent is interesting in that. All right, Maddow going after the competitor, right? OAN. There's a lot of hyperbole on both. And then you get into the intent to define the news organization, OAN, in the technical sense, or was it hyperbole? And there's right. where I think the difference would be in that we're talking about in the case of Fox News and their lawsuits and the software companies, there is a technical claim. Now, I don't know. Here's the thing. We don't have in front of us the claims verbatim against anyone at Fox News and the statements that were made, the damaging statements
right.
that Dominion says were, you know, damaging to their business. We don't have those in front of us, and so analyzing that. But it is a difference in a technical approach, because we do know that some of the claims, again, I don't know if we can attribute this to anybody at Fox News or the Fox News organization.
Or lawyers.
Anybody that they had on, a guy who sells pillows, that said, made a technical claim on a software company, because if you're saying that, if you say, okay, here's what they did, and then you get into a very, and then it would be almost impossible to say that was hyperbole.
Well,
may be some things that fall under hyperbole.
Right, because here's the point of view, and I don't know, you know, in all the different lawsuits, I know in one of the lawsuits they probably are, but the allegation that Dominion paid money, bribed the governor, that's a specific crime of bribery
right.
to a governor and the Secretary of State
yeah.
in order to let them use the manipulated software that would give
right.
more votes
right.
to
right.
Biden instead of Trump. That right. is a specific allegation.
Yeah.
But as he writes here, this is just interesting, just fascinating because of this ruling in general, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
In response, OAN sued Maddow, not because even the legal thing, because legally you can say, okay, you're literally a paid Russian propaganda. Well, you know, you can I'm trying to think of what you could you could sit there and say for the longest time that MSNBC was literally paid Chinese propaganda because they hid the fact that the this is a hypothetical. I'm not accusing them of that.
Right.
I'm not trying to get us sued, but hypothetically, you say that because they censored the one portion and went after people, the one portion of the theory of the lab leak or not. And they were part of the censoring and had said, you know, whatever. And so you decide to call them paid Chinese propaganda.
And then the Chinese whatever. Would respond by saying, well, hey, whoa, 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 whoa. We're just communists. MSNBC is crazy.
Okay. In an oddly overlooked ruling, an Obama-appointed federal judge, Cynthia Bashant, dismissed the lawsuits on the ground that even Maddow's own audience understands that her show consists of exaggeration, hyperbole, and pure opinion, and therefore would not assume that such outlandish accusations are factually true. Yeah. Even when she uses a language of certainty and truth when presenting them, literally is paid Russian propaganda. In concluding that Maddow's statement would be understood even by her own viewers as non-factual, a judge emphasized that what Maddow does in general is not present news, but rather hyperbole and exploitation of actual news to serve her liberal activism. Hmm. On one hand, a viewer who watches news channels tunes in for facts and the goings-on in the world. MSNBC indeed produces news, but this point must be juxtaposed with the fact that Maddow made the allegedly defamatory statement on her own talk show news segment, where she is invited and encouraged to share her opinion with viewers. Maddow does not keep her political views a secret, and therefore audiences could expect her to use subjective language that comports with her political opinions. Thus, Maddow's show is different than a typical news segment where anchors inform viewers about the daily news. The judge's observation about the specific segment at issue in which Maddow accused OAN of being, quote, literally paid Russian propaganda, end of quote, was even more damning. Maddow's own viewers ruled the court not only expect but desire that she will not provide the news in factual form, but will exaggerate and even distort reality in order to shape her opinion-driven analysis. Emphasis added.
First of all, I can't tell whether the judge is a liberal or a far-right conservative. Because I can't tell whether he's defending Rachel Maddow or completely throwing her under the proverbial bus. Saying, oh, even the people that watch her show know that it's all garbage.
But the interesting thing is, you go from that. What the judge is saying is, said way back then, is Maddow's show is basically parody. It's basically the Babylon Bee. Because if she knows she's lying and her audience knows she's lying, just to make a political point based on lies, well, isn't that what parody does? What's the difference then? Because parody is protected. The Babylon Bee, for example, when we read those headlines, we all laugh because there may be a semblance in a direction of where leftism is going.
Yeah, no. I would say the difference between that and parody is that parody, especially in the case of Babylon Bee, carries more truth.
Parody is more. So you have news presentation where you can have defamation. Then the next level is parody, which has partial truth to it. Well, and then Rachel Maddow, that's just all complete lies, but everybody knows it's lies, including her. And that's sort of getting back to where liberalism is today. The whole thing that we have said when Karine Jean-Pierre gets out there and speaks, she knows she's lying.
Right.
The media knows she's lying. Mm-hmm. Everybody watching her speak knows she's lying. She knows that everybody knows that she's lying, but nobody really admits it.
Well, and that's it. I dare say that Babylon Bee would have a tougher time with this judge than Rachel Maddow did.
In some, ruled the court, Rachel Maddow is among those, quote, speakers whose statements cannot reasonably be interpreted as allegations of fact, despite the fact that she used the word literally to accuse OAN of being paid Russian propaganda. The court dismissed the lawsuit on the ground that given Maddow's conduct and her audience's awareness of who she is and what she does, the court finds that the contested statement is an opinion that cannot serve as a basis for a defamation claim, which is everybody knows that it's almost as if this is a new form of media outside of parody. That opinion on MSNBC and Rachel Maddow, everybody knows is a lie, and it's expected that it's going to be a lie. And therefore, since everybody knows she's lying, she knows she's lying, the audience knows she's lying, then nobody can take it, you know, that seriously, that it would be the truth. That's amazing.
It's amazing to hear that from a judge, but I would say that that judge is also making the case for the challenger, you know, the challenge brought to OAN, and not for Rachel Maddow. Because what you're saying is then the lies can then do no damage. And the fact is that they can. And that's what the judge misses.
Okay.
Is that if you're saying that everybody knows that this is a bunch of hot air, primetime cable news is all opinionated stuff and it's all hyperbole, it's not the truth, it's not based in facts, you're admitting that there are lies. So then from there, the question is, can those lies be damaging? And the answer is yes.
But is that the precedent that was made there? Because they talk about what makes this particularly notable and ironic is a similar argument was made a year later by lawyers for Fox News when defending a segment that appeared on the program of Tucker Carlson. That was part of a lawsuit brought by former model Karen McDougal, who claimed Carlson slandered her by saying she extorted former President Trump by demanding payments in exchange for silence about an extramarital affair she claimed to have with him. McDougal's lawsuit was dismissed in September of 2020 by a Trump-appointed judge based on arguments made by Fox lawyers that were virtually identical to those made by MSNBC's lawyers when defending Maddow. In particular, the court accepted Fox's argument that when Carlson used the word extortion, he meant it in a
proverbial sense.
The what?
In a proverbial sense, right. Not literal
and,
sense.
And, right, in a dramatic sense that his viewers would have understood he was not literally accusing her of a crime, but rather offering his own subjective characterizations and opinions.
That he was, that she was just trying to get money. He wasn't, and the judge is believing basically the argument that he wasn't trying to say that she actually broke the law, committed a crime. Yeah, interesting, but I think it gets more technical with the software.
I think it is. It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up, the Biden washing machine rule, as they're calling it, going after washing machines now.
Yeah, how dare you want clean clothes.
In order to save the planet.
Yeah.
Now, the washing machine manufacturers have responded.
Yeah. Finally, the Maytag man can do something.
they had to wake him up.
Yeah. It's like I actually own Maytag.
So do I. So do I.
Yeah.
And it has not. I've had them for over a decade.
Mm. Yeah.
Washer and dryer, both.
Yeah.
No repairs yet.
Yep.
But then again, it's only me.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true.
And the cat doesn't wear any clothes. So I'm laundering.
Your cat is naked? Yes.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. Listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight.
And thank you.
All right, so here we go. Last month, President Biden's Department of Energy proposed new efficiency standards for washing machines that requires new appliances to use considerably less water, all in an effort to confront the global climate crisis. Leading industry corporations have voiced their opinion on the rule, claiming that mandates force manufacturers to reduce cleaning performance to ensure that machines comply. Each cycle will take longer, the detergent will cost more, and in the end, the clothes will be less clean. Now, the headline for this story was, Biden washing machine rule would make Americans dirtier and stinkier and raise prices. That was according to manufacturers like Whirlpool. The proposed washing machine change is the latest example of the Biden administration pushing more consumer regulations to advance green initiatives. In February, the administration received heat for a leaked proposal which would have banned half of America's gas stoves, in addition to another proposal to heavily regulate refrigerators. Like many efficiency standards, the government claims that although these standards will raise the cost of appliances, they are justified because they will reduce consumer spending on energy and water even more. Of course, if that were true, consumers would likely buy more efficient appliances anyway, given that studies show consumers consider energy and water cost, said American Enterprise Institute senior fellow James Coleman to Fox News Digital. If consumers do fully consider what they will pay on energy in their individual circumstances, then the standards would, on net, harm consumers. Their proposal builds on the more than 110 actions the Biden-Harris administration took in 2022 to strengthen energy efficient standards and save the average family at least $100 annually through lower energy costs. the Department of Energy said in a press release. You notice that I chuckled there.
Yeah.
The Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers argued that the Energy Department's washing machine regulations would have a disproportionate negative impact on low-income households by eliminating cheaper appliances from the market.
Yeah.
The Energy Department estimates that manufacturers will incur nearly $700 million in conversion costs to transition to the new machines. The proposal also argues that it won't reduce appliance performance, but skepticism is warranted because past regulations have often been found to reduce performance. Let me ask you this question here, and it's a serious question.
Right. Okay.
Low-flow toilets.
Yeah.
How many more times do people have to flush low-flow toilets? What has been the savings on low-flow toilets in general? And I don't want to get into the specific details of it, when they don't get the job done as a more high-flow toilet would.
Right. Well,
that's a legitimate question.
I think, so we can look at any appliance where these standards are put into place, right? And there are modifications that you can make, depending on the toilet you have. I actually found a brand and a model that has a trick. Now, of course, the company does not advertise it. They don't openly promote it because they can't. They would be out of compliance. But if you happen to hold the handle down for an extended period of time, it is no longer a low-flow toilet.
Yes.
Now, so there's that. There's the shower head thing. Okay, so I can just take out that little blue plastic piece on the inside and have a high flow because I don't want the flat hair like Kramer. What's left of it? I want it to be nice and full. I want water pressure.
Are you enjoying the salad? Yeah. Oh, it's delicious. Yes.
Oh.
How did you make it? I made it as I bathed.
Oh.
Remember that?
Every time.
I know you go.
I wash lettuce. I think of that episode.
And how matter-of-factly Kramer said it. Oh, everything's so, clean. You know, yeah. How did you make it? Well, I made it as I bathed.
Oh.
Putty was a germaphobe, and then the older woman was too.
That was one of my least favorite moments.
He put the disposal.
Yeah.
After he got the new high flow shower or whatever, he put the disposal in his shower.
He's cramming things down.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, that was Yeah.
Anybody eating breakfast in the next couple of minutes?
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
But then you take something like this now with the washing machines, and here's the thing, is that it affects the price. I would argue it affects, and in fact they did here, argued that it affects the ability for that machine to clean. The idea for it, not only is it to use that water and agitation and the detergents and maybe temperature of the water in order to bring that soil out of the clothing, but on top of that, with less water, you get greater friction. And you'll notice that with those low water, and I don't own one for this reason, but with those low water units, your clothes will wear out a lot faster because there is greater friction with less water. There's greater friction of those pieces of clothing during the agitation mode. And so all of that adds up to a very costly situation where you're basically not saving much at all. You're doing something to kind of soothe the activists that are out there. You're not really making any headway.
I don't know if I should. I don't
conservation
know
if, of water.
I'm going to tell you about this study because I think it's important because it is something to do with really sanitation of clothes.
Mm-hmm.
What they also found out, this is a study I saw a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
is that washing machines still did not do the job to remove all fecal matter from clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the modern washer still didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's something that probably most people didn't know. Mm-hmm. When you see that, you're like, oh, okay, well, I don't know then. I don't know about that. But mm-hmm. I was surprised when I saw that. I just figured, well, come on, I mean, with the detergent, everything else. I said, nope, you can still find, mm-hmm. you know, it on. You may not see it, but mm-hmm. it's. I don't want to get into the details, but you know what I mean.
Right.
All right.
That's why. That's why.
Breakfast now.
That's why I insist.
High fiber.
I insist that all of the babies and young children in my family do their laundry at the laundromat. Not at my house. Hey, save your quarters.
Oh, that was the thing too. That it actually remained. That bacteria remained, you know, in the actual tub.
Right.
And that's why they said,
if you don't proactively. And that's another thing. They now have the washing machine cleaner.
Yes.
So that you can keep the door seal and everything else from getting moldy. Mm-hmm. And all of that, because of the way that they're designed, I would say that may have more to do with the design. I don't know about the low flow element of it, if that is part of it or not. But the modern washing machine has a lot going on. The more electronics it has, the less interested I am, and that's really hard to find a one that has the simpler mechanics on board. It's harder to find more and more. Because we're changing our sensibilities. You know, this one will send you a text. It's a smart washing machine. I'm just sitting 10 feet away watching TV. I don't need a text to know when my jeans are mostly clean. You know, I got that on my microwave. I was shopping for a microwave. Mine from the year 2000, 23 years old, went out. And so I was shopping one for one. From the same company, because I thought, well, that one lasted that long. And then all these things came up. You can get a smart microwave. What do you use a microwave for at the most? 2 minutes? You need it to text you? Where are you going for 2 minutes that you need contact made by your microwave? I digress.
I want to show you this here, because we talk about technology. There, right there, you're looking at the app to my automated kitty litter.
Yeah, but that's something that saves you some work.
Oh, it's a tremendous amount of work.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can
that I would buy if I had a cat.
I can see now it is my cat has not used the kitty litter yet.
Nah.
Every time she goes in, she's weighed and it goes through a sanitation process and everything else.
Yeah.
After she leaves, I know if
what
she
do you
goes,
run an animal lab? What is this? Her blood's taken. We have her do some tests and some perform some tasks.
No, but I have her on a diet after her last vet visit, and she's lost 0.2 pounds in 10 days.
All right.
On her new diet, I can tell that because every time she goes into the kitty litter, it weighs her, and I can see it on my app.
How do you know she's not just keeping one paw out of the box to trick you?
Because they know basically what her weight is when she's in there, because she'll do that. Mm-hmm. She'll put, and it'll say cat not fully in, and you'll see only 5 pounds of pressure.
Oh, come on.
In.
I was only joking. Are you really?
No. Yes. No. And it will tell you, sometimes it'll tell you your primary cat is not using it because the weight doesn't match. Either the cat is, you know, just partially in the kitty litter, or it's a different cat using it. And so it doesn't go through the automatic cleaning cycle because it doesn't believe that a cat's actually been in there.
This smart litter box is for smart cats, not your cat, mister. Yeah. The technology is very interesting, but that saves you some work that you don't necessarily want to do. But I mean,
the number one reason though,
because
I went through a few of them before I found the one that I like, the number one reason.
Yeah.
Is people come into my house and they say, I don't smell any cat smell. I smell no litter bot, nothing.
Right. I only smell, you know, Gary smell.
They come in, they go, oh, I go, no cat smell? No, just old man smell.
Just,
oh, okay.
Just talk radio hyperbole and old man smell.
Yeah. A lot of hot air. It's warm in here. Could you turn it down?
Talk radio, red eye radio musk. For the critical thinker in your life.
Oh, my.
I don't think I ever want to say that again.
Oh, wow. No, I like that idea.
That creeped me out as I was saying it.
I had a guy write to me, where's my coffee cup? I want a car. I go, I don't have one.
Hey,
I like that, though. Red Eye Radio must.
We'll get Keanu Reeves to do the endorsement. He's got John Wick 4 coming out this week.
Is it this week?
I think it's this week. I think it's Friday.
How many does he kill in this one?
I think they lost count.
It's like 250 one of them.
One of the critics said it was the best one so far in the series. But of course it is. Because we've been waiting for so long. I can't wait to see it. I may take the day off. No. Here's how extreme it is. I may actually go to the theater to watch it. I said may.
Yeah, I may too. And sometimes one of my services, special preview. But normally that's a month or two in.
Yeah, right.
Where you can buy it early.
You know, it comes out. I mean, I'll be buying it anyway. Let's see here. When is it coming out?
I don't know why. I thought it was 2024.
Okay. No, it's coming out.
For God's sakes, don't anybody look. Don't kill his dog. You know?
Yeah. It's coming out. I think later. It isn't this week. Looks like it's the 24th, I think. But, yeah. All right.
He goes after apparently anyone who has a low-flow washer or toilet.
Well, of course. Let's see here. March 24th is when it hits theaters.
Is there going to be another Equalizer?
I hope so. Frankly, I'll watch anything that Denzel does. He could sit there. You know what? For the entire next Equalizer, he could sit in that restaurant and just read that book silently. I would watch it. He could do just that. And I go, nah, that was a great movie. It was a great movie.
I mean, Equalizer 2, I mean, I was still expecting, there was just something about him working basically at a Home Depot and then sitting at that restaurant that, you know, that just was appealing. And so in the second one where they changed it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now I think if there's going to be a third one, I think I read he's going to be somewhere, you know, across the world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I liked him in that little setting of just being faking that he's a normal person.
And that was based on the original, you know, CBS TV series.
I love that.
You know, being basically watching over his neighborhood. You know,
yeah,
being the guy that helps out people, helping people,
right?
You know, giving them a hand up in their neighborhood and kind of being the local hero. That was kind of what that was.
And I loved the original. And when they said it was going to be a movie with Denzel Washington, I went, oh, it's not going to be good.
Mm.
It's great.
Oh my gosh.
It was better than the series. To be
whole new level.
Yeah. 866-90 Red Eye.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on compliance, safety, accountability. At the core of compliance, safety, accountability, or CSA, is FMCSA's Safety Measurement System, or SMS. The SMS uses 7 safety improvement categories called basics to examine a carrier's on-road performance and potential crash risk. The categories of basics are unsafe driving, hours of service compliance, driver fitness, controlled substances and alcohol, vehicle maintenance, hazardous materials compliance, and crash indicator. Under FMCSA's old measurement system, carrier performance was assessed in only 4 broad categories. Violations or crashes that have occurred within the previous 24 months of performance data are included in CSA calculations, but more recent events are weighted more heavily than older events. Violations or crashes that have happened within the past 6 months are weighted 33% more than events that occurred 6 to 12 months ago. And violations that are older than a year are weighted 66% less than recent violations. This allows a carrier to improve their CSA score gradually as they see fewer and fewer violations. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Michael Schellenberger, who testified last week with Matt Taibbi at the in front of Congress, the House Judiciary Committee, on the Twitter files, had a op-ed piece that he wrote yesterday saying Democrats ignore my Twitter files testimony at their peril and ours. We talked about it yesterday, how incredible it was when you really realize that the Democrats don't care about freedom of speech.
Right.
When they don't care about the First Amendment, when they don't care about government censorship, where there's no curiosity there at all. That followed by, you saw that the Democrats now have bailed again on a border a hearing that they're having at the border with your friend, the head of the Border
Raul
Patrol.
Raul Ortiz.
He's going to be there. And they had warned, it was, you know, they told them, you know, this was going on, and the Democrats came back and said, well, no, we were never officially invited to go. What do you mean you weren't? You have one of your own witnesses here.
Right.
They just will not. They don't care about the border.
Because they know they can't get anywhere close to that. And that's the only thing they can do.
Yep.
So is run from it.
And so we'll get to that more coming up. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Call in and get a word in edgewise. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. All right, I have to ask this question here.
Okay.
And it was after I saw last night, and this was last night when I woke up, and it was on there. It was a top story on FoxNews.com for a while.
Okay.
And I said to myself, do they believe they're going to lose the Smartmatic and Dominion lawsuits, so they're going to change and become like a tabloid? Because the top headline was, trucker records creepy ghost-like figure on a highway while driving alone at night. That was the number one story last night on Fox News. It's moved down now to the second. And I'm thinking to myself,
all the viral stuff.
Is that what it's becoming now? It's you know, because I was like, and it was, you know, yeah, I watched the video and it's like, I can't tell what it is. No idea what it is.
Right.
It could be anything. Could be a reflection. I can't tell.
Right.
But that was the lead story on FoxNews.com. And that's the first thought that came to my mind. Do they believe they're going to lose this? And they're going to lose $4 billion and they have to become a tabloid and let everyone.
Well, first of all truckers know that ghosts don't hang out on that highway. They're all on I-80. But it is that, and I see it too. I think you and I were having that conversation off the air earlier about how many so-called news stories there are based on somebody's post on TikTok. A mom cries over what people said about her son, and it's a TikTok post from the mom. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm sorry that happened, whatever it was, but is that news? That's already happened. That was on TikTok. That's not news. You know? I mean, that's... And it's over and over again. Man finds genius way to remove the paint from the door that he's refurbishing. It was a sandblaster. Everyone wants to know how to get this miracle tool. It's a sandblaster. He started a new trend there at Home Depot in the sandblaster aisle. make sure you get some sand for your sandblaster. And I just thought to myself, is that what it reminds me of? The stories that would come out several years ago, started seeing these things. People are learning how to save money by doing this neat trick. Well, what I did is I took some food that we had for dinner last night, put it in a container. I put that container in a bag. I took it to my office, put it in the fridge, and then at lunchtime, instead of spending $20 at a restaurant, I ate the food from that container. And we have a microwave at work. So you took your lunch to work? That's the story?
I like the one that used to be a long time, this while back. How to pay your mortgage quicker. How to pay your mortgage off a lot faster.
It's like paying extra principal along the way. Yeah.
Make double payments.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way,
this one trick.
By the way,
not a trick.
I have to celebrate.
Yeah.
10 days ago, I paid off.
Oh, that's right. We didn't talk about it.
I paid off my mortgage.
Congratulations. Yes,
thank you.
Congratulations.
Paid off my mortgage.
That's got to be a wild feeling. I mean, I've done it before, but I mean, it's got to be that you're not going to. Well, I don't want to say this because maybe you will at some point. I was going to say you'll probably never buy anything again. You're not that old, but you might buy another property, I guess, at some point.
It'll be in cash.
Make sure.
I'm not going to do another. Well, no, I mean, it's
make sure it has a safety ramp and some rails.
I did it. It was 16 years, but I refinanced twice.
Yeah.
Both times
were
15.
Right. Yeah.
So I paid this one off like 5 years earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and the last, it would have been paid off during COVID, but
yeah.
I decided,
yeah.
You know, it's like, no need to do it. And the interest rate at that point was, you know, my interest rate was like 3.2% or something. So.
Right. Yeah.
And you pay the interest off a lot quicker on a 15-year mortgage.
Yeah.
So the interest was hardly anything. But
Like
the last 6 months, I made like six payments every month just to get rid of it. I was like, I just want to get rid of it. Just get rid of it. Get rid of it.
Right.
So
it is
unique. I will tell you this. I never thought, because I think the one thing that we learn as we get older is there are some parts of your life that are really, really long. But you don't remember them when you get to this point, and you look back and you say, boy, that was quick. Like when someone's, you know, someone brings up, how long have you been in radio now? And it's like 41 years this coming October, and talk radio, I believe, will be, it'll be 41 years July, and then talk radio will be 33? I forgot. 33 years, 33 or 34 years in October. It seems like it was like that.
Yeah.
But, and so the first
34 years, you started in 89. So it'd be 34.
34. Okay. All right. Yeah. Thanks. He knows me better than I do.
I don't mean to show off my math skills or nothing.
You remember I started in 89.
Yeah. 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 We talked about it.
But I never, especially my first, 10, 15 years in radio where you really don't make a lot of money, you're always working two, three jobs, you know it. I never thought I would own a home and stay in this business ever.
Yeah.
So
my wife and I early on realized, well, radio's not going to get it done. So we became real estate investors and did that along the way at a novice level. Built a massive, massive, massive
empire.
Company, this huge empire. I put my name on the side of all the buildings and everybody goes, who? Who's Eric? Shouldn't you put your last name on there? We just always knew that we were going to have to, whether it's another part-time job, which we've always done, or, investing in ways that, that can get it done. It was just going to have to.
Well,
that's the way it was going to be. I assumed it was always going to be that way. Because, it's radio.
And it wasn't even necessarily the money, because I knew I would make money somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It was that I was moving all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're moving every couple of years. It's like, not worth buying a house, not worth buying a house, not worth buying a house.
Yeah.
So for me, it was more of the moving, because I was always making money, because if I wasn't making money in this, I was doing something else on the side.
Yeah.
And so I knew I, But it was just, it was a combination of, okay, where's the, is there any security here? And will I ever be able to stay in one place?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I didn't object to, you know, to it. It was just, yeah. I didn't see, you know, I don't want to make it sound like I suffered during this entire time mm-hmm. because I didn't. I've enjoyed every moment of it. I almost said I enjoyed as if it's ending. I enjoy every moment of it.
Yeah.
And will continue to enjoy every moment of it. So,
sure.
But yeah, so that was,
yeah,
it's huge. Oh, it's going to be cool the end of this month not to have a payment.
Right. Yeah. To then it will feel like there's a weird void, you know, of mm-hmm. okay, shouldn't I be doing something? Wait a minute. I'm supposed to be doing something right now. There's got to be, somebody's going to be looking for me if I don't.
Well, now it sort of ticks you off. Once your mortgage is gone, it ticks you off that you're in a place with a homeowners association that could put a lien on your house if they disagree with something with you with the fine and can take your house. That seems to be, because you start thinking at that point, well, now the house is mine.
Yeah.
As long as I pay my property taxes and don't get into a fight with my HOA.
I'm in a rare situation where I don't have one. We do have a very strict set of city ordinances and guidelines, but I don't have an HOA. But I look at it as the property tax issue. Now, the good thing is our state just moved for people your age.
Yay!
And they had before, actually.
Yeah.
Before it was freezing your property tax at the age of 65.
Yep.
And now, what do they call it? Condensing it or compressing it?
Whatever
it is called.
Yeah.
But it basically is something the state of Texas did in order to help seniors. And I think that's a good thing. So it lessens the burden on seniors when it comes to property taxes, and that is something I love.
Because that happened when I hit 65. When that happened, it was like, it's frozen from the state level. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the local level.
Right,
but
right. And now it goes beyond freezing and goes into that compression mode.
So. Where I start paying less.
Yeah. You're going to be paying less.
Yay.
Right. That, to me, was great news. In fact, I remember telling you about it because I had just come across it.
And I didn't know about it.
And I was like, I had not heard it because I'm much, much younger. But I'm always mindful of that because I'm thinking to myself, well, by the time I get that, and it's going to be a long time before I qualify for that, a very long time.
I'll be dead.
My property taxes are going to be through the roof. And that's what I'm always looking at. I'm like, oh, my gosh,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're still going to be essentially, because you need to put that money aside and you need to be able to pay those taxes. You're still going to be essentially making a payment. And, you know, it's frustrating, but, you know, it doesn't come with interest. So
no,
that's the good news. It's not a mortgage. And it's moving in the right direction.
That's true. Yeah.
So by the time I'm that age, maybe our state lawmakers will abolish property taxes altogether.
Well, I don't know. That'd be 100 years from now.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Well, let's look to Star Trek. On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Ah, yes. Well, nobody owns anything, remember.
Okay.
There is no ownership of anything.
Because I remember that. Because remember, they didn't. Was it where they didn't use money?
Right.
And you and I caught the same thing on that. It's like,
then, well, how do you have rank?
Yeah, how do you have? Well, remember, nothing is value.
Right.
Well, no, we don't have money. Well, of course you have money. Society will also have some form of currency.
You need to
judge the value of everything.
If there's
one thing about capitalism is the fact that everything, this is an amazing. I knew it, but I don't know if it was Milton Friedman pointed it out. The difference between capitalism and communism is, you know, nobody knows what anything is worth in communism.
Right.
Everybody knows in capitalism what everything is worth.
You have
everything
that
has been assigned a value.
Exactly. When you assign a value, and then, because we looked at it and said, and the first thing I thought of with the whole Star Trek thing is, well, wait a minute. If you don't have any money, then you don't assign value, which means you don't assign value to the experience, training, and everything that goes into making rank,
right?
Then what's the difference between a captain, a colonel, a lieutenant?
Oh yeah, we overthought Star Trek, both Eric and I.
Well, if you're gonna design something, then expect it to be analyzed.
You can't have critical thinkers will overthink.
Well,
a sci-fi drama.
Well, ooh, that would be a cool planet. Kirk and Spock land on a planet where they just overthink everything. They probably start at my house. Look, could you just go outside for a minute? Quit thinking about which shoes you're going to wear outside. Just go outside.
Now, see, Scotty didn't overthink.
He didn't. Scotty just screamed about everything.
He was an engineer, though.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
But he just kind of glued everything together.
Yeah, he didn't. I remember my favorite one episode with him was when he got drunk with the alien.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
And he couldn't get the alien drunk, and finally he did. He defeated the alien.
And by the way, Simon Pegg in that role in the newer Star Trek movies?
Yeah.
Perfect.
No, you're right.
Perfect.
I agree.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Really interesting. Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank was on CNN yesterday. We'll play this coming up following the top of the hour, and said, and we haven't said it in this way, but he's correct. Basically, what Biden did yesterday was nationalize the banking industry.
Yeah. No, it is. I think, a good way to put it. And it's something I think that is a liberal dream to do.
Right, because you basically said that it doesn't matter. If this situation, if the government backs all the deposit holders on it,
right,
and keeps the banks or banks like it from losing more if they have to sell their long-term assets and the taxpayer subsidizes it, you've nationalized the banks.
Yeah.
There is no risk.
Yep. Yep.
We'll get to that coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.